Welcome to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
And we're back with the show. It's Gerald Glassford coming up back at you here from, of course, as I said before, the Pop Culture Cosmos. Thanks so much for watching and listening. Truly appreciate everyone out there being a part of the program. But he has returned to us because our man in the know, Josh Peterson, is working a convention right now. So he's selling crazy for the happy hoarder. Guy who stepped in was an awesome man indeed. It is, of course, TJ Johnson. And TJ, great to have you here. Looking forward to a conversation on the world of pop culture, as only you can bring, my friend.
Here you go. You got to forgive me. I'm over here being a Cody crybaby. I keep talking about he needs to finish the story. So I just had a chicken nugget. Every time I say it, I got to have another chicken nugget. Now, if I say it twice, I got to stick it up the. Anyways, we're not going there. But, Gerald, great to be on the show, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And I could say, we'll start that off with that. I can say they ran into a situation where they put themselves in a pickle. And I don't think it was intentional. They'll tell you it was intentional that they did this. That's a bunch of bull. As pardon the Brahma reference there, but I will say that they did not expect the backlash that they got when they rearranged the order of the main event for WrestleMania. You know, and they were talking about a Rock Roman Reigns main event. They've managed to go ahead and find ways out of this and turn this all around. And mind you, it's part of it's because of the fact that Rock has channeled his 90s Die Rocky Die promo style from that. He's gone a little bit, he's tried very hard to get the crowd to not like him. It hasn't always worked, but it has garnered enough interest. So now you are worried about what's going to go on. You're now concerned. You're now invested in the bloodline versus Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins as a tag team match on the Saturday, then lining it up for Sunday. I'm just planning this all out. They haven't officially announced it yet, but I'm assuming Bloodline versus Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins on Saturday, leading into a world title match for the Universal Heavyweight Championship between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. So I think they've managed to work it out well enough. They've managed to save grace and they've managed to go ahead and regain the interest of the fans in WrestleMania.
Yeah, no, Gerald, I would absolutely agree with you. And I think we kind of talked about it briefly on the last show that we did together, but kudos to the creative team there at WWE and TKO and The Rock and all those guys, Hunter or Paul Levesque, since he's going by Paul now, Paul Triple H Levesque. But shout out to those guys for being in touch. You know, I think that if you would have had prior management would have said tough cookies, this is what we're giving them and they're going to like it. At least with current management, they're looking at them and say, hey, you know what? We didn't get the response that we wanted with this and that's fine. Let's pivot. And you have to be willing to kind of do that, especially when you're dealing with, variables and X factors and you can't control how the audience and how the crowd is going to react to certain things. So you have to be able to roll with it. And I think Rock leaning into his 90s Rock, Die Rocky, Die Rock, maybe a little bit of Hollywood Rock in there, leaning into that style again, really allowed him to help, really helped him to pivot and kind of turn this thing around. So I think it's a great thing that they were able to do so. I agree. It was not in the plans, excuse me, to the point where we don't even know what Rock whispered to Cody Rhodes that day on SmackDown, that guy Cody Rhodes to jump out the ring, and they already had an entire angle that they were going to go with, and all of a sudden they had to kind of act like that didn't happen, which, you know what, it's live, it's television, it happens like that, so I'm okay with it. He's done exactly what he's planned to do, and that was to help bring interest to WrestleMania, to help put seats in, or help put butts in seats. He didn't use those terms, but, you know, help selling tickets, making sure that WrestleMania is remaining relevant. He's done exactly that, and he's going to continue to do that. So I think they did a great job leaning into what the audience and what the crowd really wants and pivoting accordingly and not becoming just so focused on what their story that they're going to tell and not assuming that they know what's best for the business as opposed to listening to what the people want, which is how the right guy's entire shtick anyway. So in regards to if he's really landing it or not, you know, even when The Rock was a heel, he was a face. He was the facest heel or the heelest face, whatever you want to look at it. He's always told that line. And I don't think this is going to be any different. I don't think he is fully comfortable in doing it yet because he hasn't been doing it for so long. I mean, the last time we got a chance to see heel Rock was, again, Hollywood Rock. And that was early to mid 2000s. We're now 20 years removed from that. So I don't think it's as natural for him to go back to that. He's still used to taking care of the people and giving the people what they want. But at the end of the day, he's still The Rock. He's always going to be The Rock. And he's going to still operate in that same gray area that he's always really operated in. So I don't really see too much changing. I don't really see too much of him trying to force it anymore. I think that last promo that he did was a lot more organic. It wasn't scripted. You can tell he kind of was just playing off what the crowd wants. And that's old school wrestling promo 101, being able to play off the crowd and go back and forth with them, almost like you're having a dialogue with them, even though you're the one with the microphone. So it's fun. I've enjoyed watching it thus far.
Once again, it is TJ Johnson, great part of what we do here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. Want to go ahead and talk about Xbox because the speculation on the entire library seemingly going everywhere except for on the Xbox was up for debate here in recent weeks. Xbox fans like you and I, you know, they were panicking. They were panicking that, you know, why should I even have my Xbox anymore? There's no more hardware that's going to be made in the future. Everything is going to be multi-platform. No reason to have an Xbox. La 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 la. Blah 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 blah. Well, yep. You know what? It turned out to be much ado about very little because Phil Spencer did go on the official Xbox podcast last week and outlined the plans for the future along with his fellow vice presidents. When it comes right down to it, the number of games that are going to multi-platform are small, and also the value for them is going to be small because we're talking about smaller games like Pentiment and also as well Hi-Fi Rush going to other platforms, but also as well older games such as Sea of Thieves that are 6 years old going on other platforms such as the PlayStation 5, what have you. It isn't the Starfield or Indiana Jones games yet going on those platforms. So that was a good sign. So before we get into the hardware news that was taken out of, you know, the thoughts that were made out of the podcast that was done, your thoughts on the actual much ado about very little when it comes to the games going to multi-platform from Xbox?
You know, I think we have to remember that we are obviously in the business of breaking news and wanting to be at the forefront of information and wanting to be at the forefront of getting stuff out. But I think there has to be some type of, excuse me, I think there has to be some type of middle area where it's like, okay, we don't have all the information yet. We can speculate, we can do all of this, but the bottom line is we don't have all the information. So a lot of times people just, they have an opinion, and that's their opinion, and there's nothing you can do short of Jesus coming back to change their opinion, right? A lot of people jumped on Xbox's throat and their neck, saying that, you know, there's no reason to have an Xbox, like you alluded to. It's going to be software, blah, 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 blah. Xbox is like, look, we hear you guys. Just hold on. And this is very similar to the WWE situation. I can appreciate how they're so willing to still kind of be open where they are and being willing to kind of pivot when they seem to be focusing in one direction. And we don't know what those internal conversations look like. They very well may have considered going 6-7 games on multi-platform, 8 games, 10 games multi-platform. They may have very well had those talks, but seeing some of the fervor that was developing online and said, you know what, maybe not. I don't know if that was the case. And like you said, it was much ado about nothing. 4 games that are going to be going to multi-platform, and that's it as it stands right now. Obviously, we'll have to see how those games sell, and there's actual market out there for Xbox games outside of the Xbox brand hardware. So it's yet to be seen. I think, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that Microsoft has to find ways to be innovative. They have to find ways to stay relevant. They have to find ways to stay in the competition. It's not going to be about the hardware sales anymore. And I've been talking about that for the last 3 years. It's not hardware anymore. Now it's going to be focused on being able to get as many Xbox items, games, into as many players' hands as possible. And this is kind of a way that they're going to do so. Now, I'm on record as also saying that I wanted them to wait, you know, for a certain amount of time for brand new games. So like the Indiana Jones, I didn't want that coming out day one on a new system. I want that to be, you know, I think you and I had talked about it too, a year, maybe 2 years out from being on, you know, from exclusivity. So let it be on the Xbox for a couple of years and then let it come out on PlayStation or wherever it's going to go. I think as long as they still kind of toe that line and stay in that kind of wheelhouse, if you will, I think they're going to be fine. I think people just, they get so worked up about nothing without having all the information. And unfortunately, that's just the age that we live in. We live in a digital age where things are leaked and information is leaked. And obviously that entire Activision acquisition leaked quite a bit of stuff, and things that they weren't really ready to talk about or really ready to have seen were leaked. And so now they have to kind of address those things on a case-by-case basis. So it is what it is. We just have to be very, very careful and not be so quick to, and when I say we, I'm just talking about the Xbox community in general. We can't be so quick to assume the worst. And I feel like that's what we do. Now, granted, Microsoft hasn't put us in a position not to do so. We've had these exclusive publishing rights to a lot of these companies, and we haven't really had the games to show for it. So I get it. Xbox has kind of put us in that position. But we really got to try to temper our flames and expectations and just let them cook. That's what the kids are saying now. When they're working on something, let them cook. Let them cook. So let Xbox, let Microsoft cook. Let's see what they're about. Let's see what they're doing. And, you know, obviously time will tell if we were right or if we were wrong. But as it stands right now, a lot of the general consensus was incorrect.
Well, if they're smart and they get the message out there and they start advertising the thing,
yeah,
meaning Games Pass and the Xbox console, yeah, this is the year that they might start caring once again about the Xbox console, saying, oh, you know, it's in the past that they've, like, okay, we just want Games Pass on any platform. Well, in a year where Sony will not have, as of now, according to their statements in their recent shareholders meeting, that they will not have any first-party AAA exclusives coming out this year, now is the time for Microsoft to take advantage, possibly even with the Nintendo Switch 2 being bumped back as rumored to next year. Now is the time for the Xbox to gain a stronger foothold in the marketplace this year.
Well, yeah, it will. But also let's keep in mind that a lot of these plans were already put in place, you know, last year or the year prior to, excuse me one second. So they were already put in plans. So it's going to be very hard to accelerate those plans if they were not already planning on being released in 2024. So yes, PlayStation admitted that they're not going to have a AAA release this year. It was not shocking, but it was unexpected. And if Microsoft is in a position to do something, now would absolutely be the time. But that was also assuming that they had the foresight to say PlayStation's not going to have a game out this year. They may not have known that. They may not have had that, you know, that foresight. They may not have had that ability to see that far into the future, right? None of us do. So I don't know if Microsoft is going to be really in a position to take advantage of it, because Microsoft's still trying to get themselves off the ground with the Activision and everything else that they've got going on. So I don't know if it's realistic to expect Microsoft to take advantage of 2024. I would like them to, obviously. And obviously Game Pass is becoming an even bigger value than what it already was. And it was already such a huge value in gaming, the best value in gaming. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I will say this, Microsoft is positioning themselves. Once again, they're positioning themselves to be very, very lucrative in the media in the future if these acquisitions start to really show dividends on what they've done. They need to see a ROI. They've invested tons and tons of money into these companies, tons and tons of money into acquiring these developers. So once we start to see acquisitions start to pay out, then it's going to be interesting to watch the way this console war, quote unquote, continues to play out, because Xbox has by far been the best price point item, the best return on investment as far as what you're paying and what you're getting. It really has been. And I think it's going to continue to be even more so with the mergers. But 2024 is definitely going to be a year that if they're able to, if they were already set themselves up to do so, they really could take advantage of the market and take advantage of the openness of the game console industry right now. Because again, like you said, Nintendo's pushing their console back to 2025. PlayStation's already said that they're not going to have any AAA first party releases this year. So as you mentioned, it's wide open right now. I just don't know if Microsoft is already in a position to take advantage of that.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. Once again, it is TJ Johnson right here with us at the Pop Culture Cosmos. Always great to have him here. TJ, I want to ask you this when it comes right down to it. The Xbox console itself, we were told after many and much speculation, and then also, you know, the plans being shown last year during the court trial as far as that's concerned. But then again, I was also told, you know, the rumors, you know, this latest rumors saying that Xbox may be getting out of the console business. Well, they reassured us that the console business is alive and well with Xbox, that they do have another one on the way, if not just a mid-generation as well. Your thoughts on this when it comes right to it? They have talked about the Xbox console next as being the biggest technological leap ever in video game history. I know they all say that. That's just all rhetoric and whatnot, but what are your thoughts on Xbox for the future of consoles?
You know, I got to be honest with you. I don't know. Considering the fact that we are in the PlayStation 5 era and how incredible of a console that's been, even though it's technically underpowered considered next to the Series X, I'm interested to see where they have the cojones to make that kind of claim, man. I mean, let's be real. They've made claim to being the best console, the most powerful console, for a couple of years now. And granted, while it may be the most powerful console, nobody knows how to use that power, nobody knows how to use the console to its full capabilities, then what's the point of having a really, really, really strong console that we can't take advantage of? So I think it's interesting choice of words. And I don't know if I'm Microsoft, if I've got the cojones to do that. But you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So I can appreciate them wanting to go out there and stand on something and say, nope, we got the best product and we're going to show you again, you know, why we are where we are, why who we are. I'm interested to see what that looks like. I still think that it's a bit premature to even talk about a next generation, considering the fact that this generation really just got off a year or two ago after the pandemic and everything that kind of set it back. So I still think it's a bit of a, I don't know, it's a bit premature to talk about next generation consoles. I think the Switch is fine to talk about because, you know, the Switch has been out forever. But as far as Microsoft and as far as Sony's concerned, I still think it's a bit premature to talk about next consoles, considering that we're only a few years into this cycle. Granted, I know cycles tend to last about eight to 10 years, you know, depending on how well that console's selling. If you're Nintendo, you last forever. So we'll see. We'll see. But I'm intrigued. I'll put it like that. I'm intrigued to see what they're talking about. I'm interested to see if they're going to do a mid-year cycle, a mid-cycle refresh. I know they're looking at one that's going to be a discless Xbox. So we'll see. I don't like to get too high or too low on this type of stuff because that's how you get disappointed, right? So I don't like to put too much into it, but I do think that that's a big claim that they're making. So I'm interested to see how they pay that off.
Once again, it is, of course, TJ Johnson with us. Truly appreciate him taking the time with us, as always, for the Pop Culture Cosmos.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, so things are looking better for Xbox fans, but if you're a fan of the Spider-Verse from Sony and all that they put out.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, some parts of the Spider-Verse are really good. Yeah. And some parts of the Spider-Verse are really bad. And as of this weekend, looks like Madam Web is on that really bad side of things when it comes to what we're seeing, you know, the response to it. It's right now it's a 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. It earned a paltry $26.5 million during the President's Day weekend. Since its Valentine's Day release, it has gotten its butt thoroughly kicked by Bob Marley's One Love, which is looks like if it does have legs, it's going to be a pretty good hit, or at least a novel success for their company as far as the film company is concerned, but involved. But I do think that when it comes to Sony and Madam Web, this is another disaster in the area of Morbius. And so with Kraven the Hunter looming around the corner, that looks like, sorry, with all apologies, Aaron Taylor Johnson, that looks like another movie absolutely nobody in the Spider-Verse will care about. So your thoughts, my friend, on the disaster of Madam Web, and again, where does Sony go from here?
I don't know what Sony expected. I mean, I don't know who Sony's test market is. I don't know who their test audience is, who goes out and screens and asks people what their interests are. I don't know. I've never seen a single... You know what Capcom has done? When Capcom did Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 remake, Capcom sent out a poll. I remember the email saying, what do you guys want to see next? Do you want to see a Resident Evil 4 remake? Do you want to see Code Veronica remake? What are you interested in seeing? I think Sony needs to take that same kind of approach when it comes to these so-called Spider-Man spin-off Spider-Verse films, whatever the case, whatever they want to name it. I don't know if because they've experienced some recent success with the Spider-Man films being attached to Marvel's cinematic universe, that they're feeling they're feeling brave, or maybe contractually they have to put out a certain amount of films to maintain the properties. I know that there are some things like that. Like, I think The Incredible Hulk was one of those things. He had to put out X amount of films to keep the property. Otherwise, it reverts back to the original owner. I think that might be in play here. Listen, the truth is, these movies suck. Anybody attached to these movies has to already feel the pressure of knowing that these movies suck and that they have sucked. And the chances are the movie that you're in is going to suck. You know, again, as you mentioned with Aaron Taylor Johnson,
Aaron Taylor Johnson, yes.
Yeah, Aaron Taylor Johnson, yes. So he's already experienced Marvel success in Age of Ultron, and that was considered the worst Avengers movie, and that was successful compared to what he's going to be putting out with Kraven the Hunter. I don't know anybody that wanted a Kraven the Hunter origin story. I don't know anybody that was even clamoring for a Kraven story at all. I was surprised when Kraven was announced as a Spider-Man 2 villain in the game. It worked out great because he was a great villain, but I didn't see that coming. And nor did I, or anybody else that I know of really ask for a Kraven spinoff or Kraven to be the main character in the game or whatever the case may be. Saying all that to say, here we are in 2024, still talking about how bad Sony mishandles the Spider-Man property and Spider-Man universe. And I clearly can see that nothing has changed and they haven't learned anything from working with Marvel Cinematic Universe. And yeah, I'm to anybody that's attached to these projects, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I would absolutely abandon ship. I would abandon ship. I would never have signed on for that. Not even. I mean, maybe I would, because I don't have any. I'm not a credible movie star. So I probably would have, but I wouldn't expect anybody that's got any kind of reputation there to sign on to these. Aaron Taylor Johnson, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have done it.
It's feast or famine, because for however much success they had with Venom, with the Spider-Verse movies, and of course with the main Spider-Man movies, they do have these, like, you know, I don't know how you would say it, these stains on their ledger in regards to Morbius and now what we're seeing with Madam Web, which got trounced by Paramount's Bob Marley, One Love, with a huge $52 million opening, well above expectations. Looks like it's going to do very decently for Paramount. There's a company that also needs some help in more ways than one, but that's Not one good movie opening is going to help that company out right now, buddy. But yeah, exactly. But when it comes right down to it, though, the future we will see. I really think after they just, I don't know, this may even put the Kraven the Hunter movie in peril. They may just sell it to Netflix and there you go. That may be their best option instead of just coming out to dismal returns. To just go ahead, throw it on Netflix because they have already established a good relationship with Netflix and just go from there.
You know what they have? Excuse me. They have established a good relationship with Netflix. Here's what I would say, though. If I'm Netflix, I'm not offering you much money for this film because I already know. I already know the situation that you're in. Like, you're selling it to me because it's about to be a flaming bag of poo. And you're like, I just want to make some kind of money on it. So if I'm Netflix, I'm not going to lowball them, but I'm not going to offer them top dollar for this film either. You want to stream it through us? That's fine. We can do that. But I'm not going to, you're not going to get back what you thought you were.
I understand. I get that. But yeah, I mean, there's no pretty way out for this for Sony. No, I have not. A feeling when it comes around, you will not see great success from Kraven the Hunter unless something dramatically changes. And I'm not expecting it to happen. Because it's setting itself up. It looks very similar to what we saw with Morbius. The way the trailers were set up, the way it looks, the way it feels. It looks the way that Morbius looks the way that Madame Web looks the way. Yeah, you know, you even had Dakota Johnson. She was, I want to say misrepresented as far as her quotes, but the inference we got, you know, as far as it was not a very good press tour for her as far as some of the words that were taken out of context. And yeah, it just all led up to a very disappointing return when it comes down to it with Madame Web. And I just think for Sony, they need to reevaluate how they do business with the Spider-Man properties. I understand they have 900 characters plus in the Spider-Man universe that they have access to go ahead and make properties out of. But just because you have them doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, Gerald, in some cases, less is more. And I think when you're dealing with these kind of characters and the amount of characters, because again, the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery alone is second maybe only to Batman. And maybe he might actually have a better Rogues Gallery than Batman. But that's another conversation for another day. I think what it really boils down to is Sony needs to get back to understanding what it is that people want, which Sony historically has not been very good at. I mean, how many wasn't Sony the one behind the Resident Evil films, or was that not, that wasn't Sony?
No, it was.
That was Sony, right? Yeah.
Yes.
I just don't understand how they
earned over $1 billion on that property.
How many films later? How many
took
films
about, later did it take for took them to about get eight. Million? Took about yeah. eight or nine, but yes, they got there. They
you put
there.
Out one Avengers film, you're already hitting $1 billion. That's my point. Like, they keep throwing crap on a wall and expecting it to stick, and it's not. It's not sticking, but they just keep throwing. You can't blame them for trying. They're gonna shoot shots, and I guess they feel like they've got enough disposable income where they can keep shooting these shots. And I mean, you know, you miss every shot you don't take, so kudos to them for wanting to continue to try. And but at the same token, let's be realistic about what their expectations are. And let's be realistic about what the audience's expectations are going to be. You and I, as audience members, if we've never even mentioned Madame Web in a sense. One, I don't even know where the Madame Web movie came from. Why they decided to do Madame Web instead of any other character. I'd rather you done an Aunt May spinoff than Madame Web. At least I'm invested in Aunt May. At least I'm invested in that character. I have nothing to do with Madame Web. I don't even know where that came from. So why would we, as a consumer, want to experience that on a big screen? I don't understand where Sony's, like I said, I don't know who does their development. I don't know who does their research. I don't know who their focus groups are. I don't know any of that. Sony, you guys might want to give us a call. Give me a call. I'm willing to help, bro, because This is not it. And if this is what you're going to continue to put out, then you might as well just give the rights back to Marvel. Let them have everything. Just sell it for whatever you can sell it for and just go. Like, it's just not worth it. You can't be seeing a good return on your investment with these. I mean, the amount of money it takes to make a a motion picture nowadays, and especially one that has to be visually appeasing, as you know, Spider-Man-esque films, you can't be seeing a good return on your investment. It's just not smart. It's not smart business.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
Once again, it is TJ Johnson. Truly great to have him here for the second half of the Pop Culture Cosmos. Appreciate him stopping by, as always. Want to go ahead and ask this. We didn't even cover a really hot game release. We covered really briefly Helldivers and the success it's had as a second party or third party exclusive for PC and the PlayStation. It's been a huge success so far. They've actually, you know, they were not even prepared for the type of success on it as far as the company themselves, because their servers can't even hold up with the amount of demand for it right now. But no, Helldivers 2 has actually been a big hit for PlayStation and PC. So good for them. I do want to mention, though, that Skull and Bones, the long gestating, long in development game, a game that looked like it was going to be canceled like 14 times during its process, did finally come to fruition. It actually released last Friday. If you've not watched any YouTube lately, it's been on every single seemingly commercial break for YouTube. Skull and Bones is out there as far as if you want to get your pirate ship battle fix, it does that. I still have some issues with it, though, but your thoughts now that Skull and Bones is out in the wild and into the open seas, my friend.
My thoughts on Skull and Bones is now we can finally get back to waiting on that Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag remake. That's all I'm concerned about. If I'm gonna do ships and seas and set sailing and all that, I want Assassin's Creed Black Flag. So just yay, Skull and Bones is out, and it only took 6-7 years to get there. I'm glad that they did
more.
Amen. But I'm glad that they did it. I'm glad that they got that, you know, proverbial monkey off their back. Now just give me my Black Flag remake, and we can move on, because it's. I'm not really interested.
Thing is, though, the reason why I say that, and the reason why I was happy you mentioned the Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, is I do want a pirate game, but I want a pirate game that's not cartoony looking like Sea of Thieves, but will allow you to go and do other things besides blowing up other ships. Blowing up the ship battle should not be the singular focus to the game. It should be just one part of the pirate experience, as far as, you know, maybe, you know, just getting in a bar and you and I are playing co-op in a bar, and all of a sudden, you know, a random NPC comes at us and, you know, challenges us to a fight, or hits us with, you know, hits me on the side of the head with a tankard, and we now have to go into a sword duel with, you know, with other, you know, pirates, you know, something like that, or a brawl with other pirates. Or you go on a mission to go, like an, you know, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, and find some treasure, or go look for some treasure, you know, X marks the spot and all that. Or when you're battling on the high seas and you are in the middle, the midst of a ship battle, which does admittedly look really good in Skull and Bones, can you, at the middle of a battle, can you be given the option to board that other ship, fight that crew, win that ship, and now have it as part of your armada going forward? These are the options I want out of a pirate game, and Black Flag doesn't give you all of them, but it gives you more than what I'm seeing with Skull and Bones. Your thoughts on my context? Am I wrong in wanting that type of pirate game?
No, I don't think you're wrong in wanting that type of pirate game. I think you want what you want, Gerald, and you should be applauded for wanting what you want, sir. But in all seriousness, I would expect a pirate experience like that as well. And granted, as you said, that's not something that Assassin's Creed does all. They don't do all of that. But they do quite a bit of it. And what they do very, very well. So when I think of a pirate experience, and I've never wanted a pirate experience until I played Black Flag, and then I was like, huh, I actually think I might enjoy this. So I can appreciate, you know, Skull and Bones and Sea of Thieves and what they were trying to do. I don't think I was their core audience. I wasn't their target demographic for that game. But a game like Assassin's Creed Black Flag 4, or I'm sorry, Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, blah, blah, blah. Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. That's the kind of game that I'm the core audience for. That's me right there. So, yes, I want something that's a little bit more realistic. I want to be able to engage in fisticuffs on the boat. I want to be able to engage in sea battle. I want to be able to engage in all of that. I want to look for buried treasure. I want to do all that. And I still want to go stab people. So I get to do all that and go stabby stabby in Assassin's Creed Black Flag. So they just need to go ahead and just give me that. This is great. This is fun. Kudos to them. But now give me Black Flag.
Once again, it is TJ Johnson from the Pop Culture Gospels. Truly appreciate him being a part of what we're doing here today. One of the things I did want to ask you that has slipped under the radar is when Disney announced all the great stuff that's going on with them and, you know, their goals for the future. One of the things we forgot to mention was the $1.5 billion investment they're making with Epic Games on expanding the Fortnite universe into something Disney-esque. I haven't heard your thoughts on this. I thought we could go into detail in regards to this because it is something that I think should be considered monumental for a company in Disney that has had its highs and lows in recent years. This may be the move, especially when it comes to video games, Disney Infinity. But when it comes to this, I think it could end up being a make or break move as far as Disney and the resulting of video games going forward.
Well, you know, again, this is very Sony-esque, but Disney is not afraid to try it. And I'm okay. I'm on board with this. I actually am excited to see what Disney does with their investment into Epic and Fortnite. I'm excited to see what comes out of it. I didn't see it coming. I'll be the first person to admit that, especially after the failures of Disney Infinity. I definitely did not see this coming. But now that it's here, or now that it's going to be here, I think I'm on board for this. I'd like to see what they do. And look, Disney has this model that's very similar to Sony. If you got enough money to throw at it, the problem will go away, or the problem will fix itself. I don't know if that's going to be the case here, but I'm down for them to try. And I'm interested to see how this actually turns out. So I'm with you. I didn't know what's happening, but now that it's here, I'm thoroughly intrigued. I'm thoroughly intrigued to see how this plays out and exactly what they're willing to put their name on and how far they're willing to go and how far Epic and Fortnite is willing to say, okay, Disney, we're going to let you in on this. Because I'm certain that they're not going to be, they weren't the first company that tried to get in on Epic and Fortnite. But they're the ones that successfully have really kind of done so. And Epic Fortnite has done very, very good with their crossovers and their events and having the other characters in their game. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I'm curious. I don't know if it's still for me, but it might be for my kids at some point. So we'll see.
But let me ask you this. How do you think they're going to incorporate the Fortnite experience with Disney? How do you foresee this happening? How do you see
I don't know. And the reason I say that, Gerald, is because Fortnite already has such a very well-established formula that I think you'd be foolish to go and try to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a lot more of them having the characters like you would have in Fortnite events and having different things. And now you've got Mickey and Minnie and Pluto and Donald and having Disney themed events and a little bit more in that regard. I don't see them taking over Fortnite and it becoming a Disney game. I just see them allowing Disney's characters to be represented. Maybe a little stronger than some of the other characters. I don't know, considering the investment. It's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see what they allow and what they don't allow and how far they're willing to go. So I'm not sure, but I imagine there's going to be a liberal use of the licensing of a lot of these Disney characters. So that's what I think.
I think it's going to be a lot of liberal licensing. I agree with you on that. I think we're going to get a lot of really cool looks, and whether or not they, you know, they will be able to expand the universe in a big way, we'll see. But and when it comes right down to it, $1.5 billion investment from Disney into Epic as far as their Fortnite game, and to whether or not we will see, you know, the expansive world of Fortnite go even further with Disney, it remains to be seen. But yeah, $1.5 billion, that's going to be a huge investment. And I really think that there will be a payoff. I think this is probably outside of just letting the top third-party makers out there go ahead and establish their own Star Wars games. This is probably one of the smartest moves Disney has made in the video game world in quite some time.
I absolutely agree. I mean, it's an established property. They know what they're doing with Fortnite. They've already got a core audience there, and now Disney's been able to jump on board with that core audience. It's a great move for them. Absolutely.
All right, my friend. Always great to have you here. Looking forward to our continued conversations. But TJ, any last thoughts before we head on out?
You know, it's going to be an interesting time in gaming. It's going to be an interesting time in pop culture. But as you already know, Gerald, I'm here for all of it. I'm here right here with you on the Pop Culture Cosmos.
That you are, my friend. Once again, it is TJ Johnson. Great to have you here, and always great to have you a part of what we do right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos.
If you're in the Las Vegas and Henderson areas and are looking to buy, sell, or trade the best in classic or current video games and pop culture collectibles, there's no better place to go than Retro City Games. From Xbox to PlayStation, Nintendo to Atari, the great crew at Retro City Games provides the best place to go for all your gaming options. Stop by their two awesome locations in Henderson and also the Las Vegas Strip, or follow Retro City Games on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest deals and new items. Without a doubt, there's no better place to go for your gaming needs than your friends at Retro City Games.
It is Joe Soro with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching and listening. Last thing before we leave, my friend, your final thoughts on All-Star Weekend. Again, a weekend I was very unimpressed by, just absolutely did not want to put interest into it, because it just didn't seem like the All-Stars didn't want to put their interest into us. But that being said, I've heard some calls for just getting rid of the All-Star Weekend entirely and just having a week off or something like that. This is financially too viable for these cities. And it's just social media stuff that's out there.
Man,
I'm just throwing that out there, man. I didn't say it myself. I wouldn't get rid of it.
This is why I'm not on Twitter, folks. Twitter is worse than even the tabloid TV trash. It is.
I just want to hear your thoughts on it.
It is alligator shit is what Twitter is and social media.
Listen,
we saw something during this weekend that was really cool, actually. Okay, Ionescu hit 26 points from NBA three. Mm-hmm. She hit her first five shots. And you got to have stuff like that. That's fun. That's what it's for. It's an exhibition. It's to promote the game, folks. All-Stars are supposed to promote. I don't want to hear about your whining and you're crying and your ass hurts. You're making $80 million a year, yet these guys whine more and more. You're supposed to represent your league and promote it. You're promoters, too. That's what they pay you to do. So give me a break, you know? Like
it took. And of course they're not going to get rid of it.
WNBA player to actually do their job. And unfortunately, that whole sequence lasted, what, a minute? They should have put her in the three-point contest. I don't know why they just had her and Steph. I thought she was going to be in the three-point contest. Why didn't they put her in the three-point contest?
That would have been a good move.
It was like, dude, she scored. Everybody scored 26 points almost in the three-point contest.
Well, the winner, I think, was 29, if I'm not mistaken.
True, but like, you know, Trae Young and.
But she would have scored high.
I don't understand. I heard Kenny Smith said that she should have been hitting shots from WNBA area. Why? She hit 26 from NBA.
That's not going to help.
Look, Kenny Smith and I, Kenny Smith, I think I might have said this before. Kenny Smith is the dork in your school that tries to be cool. He's made a career out of it. Doesn't know what the hell he's talking about 90% of the time. And even if he does know what he's talking about, he doesn't even know how to explain it right. That's Kenny Smith.
I think the frustration boils over from what they see in the game and how bad it is. And that's why it just reflects on the entire weekend. But you're right. There is some positives that you could have taken out of the weekend. You know, we now have G Leaguers winning back-to-back slam dunk titles. We now have, again, like you said, Sabrina, she did a great job. She did not do herself wrong in any way whatsoever. She did an outstanding job facing off against Curry. And then, of course, the three-point contest and all that. But this All-Star weekend is too financially viable. It's not going away anytime soon.
No,
it's not
going away at all. This is supposed to be a promotion of your league. This is supposed to be fun and exhibition. That's what it's for. It's not supposed to mean
just imagine
something.
When Caitlin Clark comes into the
can event. can you just stop doing things for freaking money all the time or some reason? Do we have to have a reason for everything? Do we? Do you ever call your friend and just talk about nothing? Do that. You'll see. You'll live a better life. You have to call people to need something all the time. Do you have to do something to always have some kind of meaning? I don't understand. This is the problem. This is why this stuff infects your brain. It's garbage. Pay attention to the basics. When you pay attention to the basics, this is what you do. You have someone unique coming to do a job to she promoted the NBA better than anybody else. How does that work? Instead, you watch 211 points. Really? Karl Anthony Towns scored 50 points in 28 minutes.
Most of it in that fourth quarter.
Come on. This is stupid now. That's stupid. And that's the player's fault. You want to have fun? Look, it's basketball. You're not playing football. Play a little bit. Just play. Just show something a little bit so that you're excited. You can still do your dunks. You can still do all this, but this don't. We have to have some, we should scrap this and have everybody have a day off. Next thing you know, no All-Star game. Then no tournament. Then we only have 50 games. Then might as well just go into the playoffs. No regular season anymore because it hurts people. Bunch of freaking pussies everywhere. It's like, at what point does your non-testicle existence, where are your balls to just do stuff you're supposed to do without some kind of reason? Seriously. It's getting tiring, and it needs to be said. It needs to be said on a bullhorn. Enough of this crap. Seriously. And the fact that Kenny Smith, and again, I'm not surprised Kenny Smith says something dumb, whether you want to call it sexist or I don't really care about that garbage. He's an idiot. He's always been an idiot. Doesn't know what the hell he's saying after. He's a comic relief there. He doesn't even know it. And you got this unique setup and you promote it for 1 minute. Why? Because what? They were worried that she was going to score 8 points? So what? Put her in the three-point contest. You had her in there for a minute. Go home. What is it? It's TNT, right? Go hard or go home, whatever the hell the slogan is now.
Again, next year they're going to have Caitlin Clark involved, and I think that'll be really
fun. Put them in the three-point contest. Not some gimmicky thing that you knew Steph wasn't going to lose. Really? You could have blindfolded them, you would have won that. I don't want just women. This is the three-point contest. Put them in with the big boys. Let them compete with the big boys. Let them embarrass some of those guys. That, to me, is entertainment. That's promotion.
And on that note.
I don't get triggered. I already I'm already triggered, naturally.
And on that note, it is the Lakers Fast Break. It is Gerald Glassford along with Joe Soro. If you have any questions for us, always feel free to put it in the comments below or LakersFastBreak@yahoo.com. Tomorrow, again, I've got scheduled guests. Tomorrow in the morning, I've got Alfred Esmin. And in the afternoon, I've got Mike Angolano. If Joe wants to do a show, that's up to him. Let me know if he wants to go ahead and do something tomorrow night. Also, Stone Hansen said he wants to do something, I believe, on Tuesday. And then we'll see what we got riding for us on Wednesday as well. So a lot of stuff planned for you this week as we head into the last part of the season. But any last thoughts, my friend, before we head on out?
Yes, Thursday couldn't come fast enough.
I agree with you 100% on that one. Because we're going to try to fill up the space in between, that's for sure. That's the only thing we can do.
Yeah, that's easy. I'm not worried about that. There's always enough material to talk about. But I'm ready for this next 26 games. I want to see what this team's made of. And I want to get into the playoffs and hope that we're all wrong. I'm really hoping we're all wrong. We'll talk more on Tuesday with Stone. I'm actually curious.
He was not feeling well this past week. I'm glad he's feeling better, but he has got a lot to say about all LeBron stuff.
Thank you, Dante. This was not a rant. This was a public service announcement. It's getting to the point where when something doesn't make sense, it needs to be put out to light. How are you paying? These guys are making more money than anyone has ever made in the history of the NBA. You have medical staffs that are state of the art. You have nutritionists that are state of the art that are a button away to get. You have first class flights wherever the hell you want. Every accommodation, every kiss ass piece of garbage that'll kiss your butt for whatever. You have everything you could ever want, and yet you're still complaining about this or that. And it's not them sometimes. It's the idiots that are watching or complaining or whatever bot that's out there, whatever Russian, Chinese, Norwegian computer. I don't care what the hell it is. They're out there to just make you feel like you got to talk about some BS. It's all a scam. This is not a conspiracy theory. Look at every response, the first response of every topic online. It's always some a-hole trying to instigate something. Somebody's playing with you guys. Stop buying into it. Stop being the moth to the flame. Everything on social media is supposed to get you angry.
Here's another one for you. Jay Williams, ESPN, former, number two pick or whatnot? Blew out his knee or something. He had a really bad accident.
I know he is.
Yeah. He said over the weekend that Caitlin Clark is not great unless she wins a championship. So any player.
In Iowa?
Yeah, at Iowa. She said she is not great unless she wins a championship. So any player, in his estimation, is not great unless they win a championship.
So Larry Bird is not great losing to Magic in the 79 finals?
Charles Barkley is not great? Pete Maravich?
Well, Charles Barkley makes sense. Charles Barkley was lazy. So was he really about winning?
His high end, I will argue with you on that.
Plus, he played at Auburn. Who the hell wins at Auburn and Iowa?
Pete Maravich at LSU?
LSU, again. If you watch college basketball, it's very difficult to win if you're not a Power 5 team. And then in the last 40 years, 50 years, that has changed, right? So UConn replaced Indiana. Every now and then you had Villanova. Right? They came in, they became a Power 5 versus, let's say, I don't know, who was really good back. North Carolina still stayed good. Duke still stayed good. UCLA. So Villanova replaced UCLA, whatever. Like this, college basketball is you're not going to get some middle tier team that wins a championship. It's extremely rare. Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, used to be UCLA. Used to be Indiana, replaced by UConn, replaced by Villanova. These are the teams that usually win. Once in a while, you'll get a Michigan State, but they're a top-tier team. Maryland. So it's Georgetown was perennial for in the 80s and a little bit of the 90s. Alonzo didn't win a title. Dick Hemme didn't win a title. Patrick Ewing should have had three. Akeem is another one with Houston. Fly Slam and Gemma could not win a championship. So I don't know. I'd have to watch. I don't get the context. Why would he say it like that? Did he just flat out say she needs to win a championship because she's that great? She should be able to lead them.
That's his comments. Just that he
does. This is women's basketball too. I mean, it's different. Mm-hmm. UConn, right? They were the perennials. Stanford
every year,
right? LSU won it last year, which was not the norm, right? They don't win three in a row, four in a row, whatever, like UConn would. I don't know what the point of that discussion is. Does he watch women's basketball?
Not does very he know closely,
what, Iowa, what Iowa's pro, does anybody know what Iowa? Okay, let me ask you this. Does anyone know that Iowa women's Iowa basketball exists without Caitlin Clark? Did anybody know what the hell a sycamore was in 1979 when Bird was there? Did they even know that it was in Terre Haute, Indiana State? I'll tell you right now, if you ask my dad that in 1979, no. He knew after. So what exactly are you looking for? And this is a professional analyst, right?
Yes.
I know it's an opinion, but seriously? What is the purpose of that? And I don't want to hear sexist stuff. Like, this has nothing to do with that. This is just plain ass analysis. That's the word. Analysis, ass is the word that I think of when I explain that. Like, what is that? I don't understand the difference. This lady is hitting logo threes. I can't even hit an NBA three sometimes. I struggle. She's hitting logo threes. You have any idea how strong that lady is? Ionescu hitting, she was hitting threes like any NBA player. Was just flicking her off her. It was just flicking off her wrist. Nothing. It was like, is that gonna just go and get this? Boom, boom, boom. I think if she hadn't gotten tired towards the end, she probably would have dropped 30. You could tell she kind of got tired. It's that extra foot, whatever that is. It and then of course she's nervous. Imagine if she wasn't nervous.
Good point.
Because you know. Look, I'm a chauvinist sometimes by choice, just because I'm a jerk like that. But when it comes to talent, you got to call it what it is. I saw three guys drop 26 from the same spot. She dropped 26. She should have been in that 3-point contest. Not just playing against Steph Curry.
Dante, don't forget Cheryl Miller and how dominant she was as a player.
See, I didn't see Cheryl play. I don't know how good she was.
She was great. She was real good. For the period of that time, she was really good, in my opinion. She was great, touching on that. I think she was
well, her and, great. Her and Reggie used to, in the streets of Riverside, they used to hustle.
They so used to I've hustle heard, players yep. a lot.
And then they go buy McDonald's. That's what Reggie said.
That's funny.
Yeah, why do they keep putting wrestling belts on these people? It's like... maybe because I was a wrestling fan back in the day. When I see...
I'm telling you, it's the WWE. They want to do it to market, man.
Well, when I see the WCW, the prettiest belt is the WWF championship belt that the Warrior used to wear. He'd wear the light blue, the white. I always thought that was the coolest belt. And this is a guy that likes black, too, but... When the Ultimate Warrior would switch the colors, I was like, man, that's a genius. It looks so good. The NWA or WCW Heavyweight Championship belt, I almost feel like that's an insult to those who actually carry that legitimately. I don't know if I'd ever want to do that.
Great to have you here, and always great to have you a part of what we do right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos.